The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Only NFL podcast where one of the hosts agreed with Mike Vrabel when he said he would be neutered for a bowl. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I thought we were going to start the show with Mike Vrabel. Bill Barnwell is my guest today. But then massive news dropped. Well, first news came out that Matt Eberflus likely to keep his job with Chicago Bears. I thought we would start with that. And then it was topped in further coaching news with perhaps the most shocking development, even more shocking, I would say, than the Vrabel ousting of this cycle, which is that Pete Carroll is no longer the coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Bill, let's just start right there. We're here to preview the wild card round, by the way, and the games are amazing. I'm excited to get into them, but we do have to start with this news. I think as we are speaking, the Pete Carroll press conference might still be going on. Did not sound like it was his choice based on the conference and what he's saying. What is your reaction to this news and then ultimately to the decision?
Shock, right? I mean, it's always kind of felt like Pete has been able to call his own shot there, for better or worse, since he got there. Like, you know, ownership obviously has changed. Paul Allen passed away. But I don't know. I've never got the vibe that somebody was telling Pete, like, your job is on the line or you need to have this happen. It always kind of felt like Pete would sort of leave on his own. Like, he's an older guy. He looks like he's 40 and he's much older than that. But it kind of figured, okay, when Pete is ready to retire, they'll make a change. They'll bring someone else in. Maybe they'll promote Shane Waldron or somebody else. And that day is coming, but it's not today. And then it was suddenly, unexpectedly, out of nowhere today. And I was shocked. I think you can see Pete was shocked in terms of, I mean, he came out and after the season, he said, I want to keep coaching these guys. And it didn't really feel like it was, you know, really up for debate. But I mean, Mina, you're one of the first people I thought of, obviously. I mean, when Pete got there, you were a fan of the Seahawks. Now you're a, you know, a very prominent and very talented football analyst on television. Like, so much has changed for the Seahawks over the course of their decade. Can you even remember what it was like when Pete got there to begin with?
Yeah, I remember having mixed feelings about the hiring. It is interesting. I was thinking back to the Holmgren era, and you know, the Seattle has had like very good a good track record with their coaches. Yeah, you know, obviously Holmgren was a great coach and incredibly successful there. And but I think just thinking back to how long it was ago when he came in, how quickly they became relevant. It did not take very long. It started with the construction of the Legion of Boom and what would in the defense, and then it was ultimately when they found Russell Wilson. But the fact that there's been so many different versions of the Seahawks under Pete Carroll, different versions with Russell Wilson, and then ultimately before Russell Wilson, of course, and then after Russell Wilson, to have the level of success that he had is extremely rare in the modern NFL across multiple years. His wins record is unbelievable. The fact that they've always been like relevant during his tenure is incredible. And you know, I do believe he'll go down, if he retires this year, we'll see, as one of the greatest coaches in the history of the sport. I think as far as like today though, I'm surprised because of what you said, which is the amount of power he had accrued in the organization, ultimately winning a power struggle with Russell Wilson, him and John Schneider, by the way. But when you look at the record of the team on its face, it is kind of similar to the Bill Belichick thing, only the opposite. With Belichick, and we're still waiting for that decision, I think the reason why we've gotten to this point where his departure is still on the table, we'll see what happens. You might be listening to this, it might be decided by now, is because of the failures of the offense in New England and his contributions to the failure. With Pete, I have to think it's because of the failures of the defense, a defense that has underperformed now for about 6 years. They've been, you know, below average in DVOA pretty consistently for a really long time. This year, I think probably hit their lowest, finishing 28th, really collapsing in the second half of the season. I have to think, if I'm Jody Allen, it was probably the Steelers game, watching the defense put up a real stinker in a must-win game. And then, you know, looking at your coach, and that's his side of the ball. And he has had the chance to try different coaches. He's drafted a lot of players, a lot of top players, and it's not working. And I also think it's a defense that has underperformed relative to some of the talent available, as well as making some bad personnel choices. So I'm sad. I think he's an amazing coach, incredible record, but I guess ultimately where I come down, Bill, is the decision does make sense from a football perspective. Of course, that depends on who they bring in.
Yes, that's the other part of it, I guess. And we can talk about that, you know, next. But just in terms of, you know, like what we think about the Seahawks team, like there's always been an excuse, right? There's always been like, we're just going to do this offseason. We're going to trade for Jamal Adams. We're going to hire Clint Hurt. We're going to change our coordinator. We're going to bring in more pass rushers. Those never really stuck. And I think really over the last few years, it was one thing when it was just Sean McVay who was kind of torching the Seahawks, but when it was Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, and it felt like every single week when you expect that Niners Seahawks game, I know from my perspective, I'm not a Seahawks fan, I would still be kind of terrified for what was going to come out of it. That felt like it wasn't changing. And it felt like whatever solutions they had to try and solve those problems had not been successful. And I wonder if that meant more just in terms of like, we know we have to play these teams four times a year and Pete does not have solutions for how to solve it. And maybe Pete's never going to have a solution for how to solve it and solve those teams. And so, you know, it's so tough because I think when I've talked about Belichick, this is very similar to the conversations we're probably going to have about Pete Carroll, this idea of, well, we know what he's not good at. And that's fair to say that he struggled with this or that. Belichick, obviously the offense, like you said, Pete Carroll, you know, getting a more modern defense. But there's no guarantees that the next guy is going to be better. I mean, Dan Quinn has been kind of the hot candidate, the logical one. We were all ready for Dan Quinn to get fired in Atlanta like a season and a half before it happened. Like, we're not that far removed from Dan Quinn being a mess in Atlanta. I think these sort of hires, when you're replacing someone who's been there for so long and been successful and consistently so good for so long, like, it's so hard to nail that second hire. And so I'm really intrigued to see if they did this knowing they were going to hire someone very specific, or if it was just, we need to make a change and we're going to hire the best person we can.
Yeah, I think with Pete Carroll, the floor was always going to be high. I never expected them to have a losing season. Ultimately, they didn't, you know, this year. But I also didn't, over the last, you know, recently, and especially this year, didn't expect the defense to be able to stop those offenses. And because of that, I think a change makes sense, even if the change might not work out. I, Bill, have said this before. I have abandoned the practice of trying to predict who will be good head coaches in the NFL. Like, I mean, really, it's all over. Like, we can,
it's true.
You know, I can tell you what my preferences would be. I mean, I would love to see either Ben Johnson or Mike McDonald, who are the two top, I think, coordinator options for this job. But I'm not confident saying that they would do a better job than Dan Quinn, who has done an excellent job in Dallas, has crucially changed a lot of his tendencies in Dallas from a play calling perspective, with both the coverages and the fronts in a way that I would find intriguing. But it's really, really hard to predict head coaching success in this league. I think you said something, though, that I think is really important with the defense, though. They've tried a lot of things. Like, I think you say, well, what if Pete Carroll did not? He's tried. They have gone through different defensive structures, philosophies. They have not only invested draft picks, but the Adams trade. I think of the Leonard Williams trade this season, which doesn't look great now, obviously. They've tried stuff. They signed Draymond Jones to a big contract. So he has been given resources to fix it and hasn't been able to over the course of, you know, 6 years, which is tricky. Let's wrap here. Do you think it's a desirable job?
It's so funny. We're on the same wavelength. That was the question I was going to ask you. Like how desirable is this opportunity? I think it is, because you've seen ownership be very patient. I mean, I don't think Pete was like at risk of losing his job year after year, but very easily, you know, when Russell Wilson and Pete and John Schneider had that power struggle, I think a lot of teams would have said, we're going to stick with the quarterback. We can find a new coach. We can find a new GM. And that's going to appeal to you know, other coaches out there, because ownership matters. I know that, you know, when you talk to people in the league, when you talk to coaches about where they might want to go, you always hear about ownership mattering. I think more than we talk about it, maybe on the outside, because we don't see the day-to-day stuff where coaches are dealing with owners in terms of how meddlesome are you going to be? You know, how much are you going to interact with me? And of course, I think Carolina is the classic example of like how that can go wrong for a coach and a coaching staff. And I think that's going to be appealing, but this is a tough spot. They don't have a young quarterback. I think Geno Smith is still a good quarterback, but he's not exactly, you know, going to be around for the next decade. They have young pieces on both sides of the football, but not a ton of draft capital now. The most of the Russell Wilson draft capital, that trade is gone. And they're in a super tough division. You're getting four games against Sean McVay, who's about to reload with $40 million in cap space and all their draft capital. And Kyle Shanahan, who's running the best team in football, best organization in football, I think we can probably say. So there are coaches who are going to say, screw it, I'm going to overcome that anyway. But I think that's going to be difficult when you look at other teams that have, you know, better quarterbacks or easier paths to contention elsewhere around the NFL.
Are there many teams with better quarterbacks that are open for coaches?
The Chargers are the easy one, right?
The Chargers are the obvious one, but the rest of the team is a disaster, I would say.
Yeah, that's fair. Would you, maybe you're more excited about, I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to think about
it. I mean, there's a reason these coaches' jobs are open, right? It's usually because you didn't have the quarterback.
Yes. Like Washington, for example, like they have the second overall pick.
That's the question, I think, for the future head coach is, would you rather be with an organization like Washington? Maybe, well, I guess we'll talk about Bears in a second. Maybe Atlanta is going to make a move at the quarterback position. But those are question marks, right? And that's where Seattle's a little bit unique. You think of another one?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I have been pretty vocal about me believing Geno Smith is really not the problem in Seattle and wasn't this year. And
I agree.
Hey, Ben Johnson, Geno Smith has shredded the Lions 2 years in a row right in front of him. You like what you see, bud? Come on over. You want some really good young wide receivers, you know?
I wonder about Pete though. Like he's now an advisor to the Seahawks. He's not getting involved with the coaching hire. Maybe. So if you're one of those teams, if you're the Falcons, for example, and you've seen Pete Carroll have consistent success where you can feel pretty good, you're going to win 9 games with Pete Carroll, and 9 games is going to win you the NFC South pretty much every year because it's such a terrible division. Wouldn't you at least want to reach out and be like, hey, we should try and go get Pete Carroll? And that just seems like a very logical, exciting coaching candidate if he's ready to go coach somewhere else.
I mean, but that's what's so wild about this cycle, the fact that he is potentially available. Bill Belichick is potentially available. Jim Harbaugh is available. Mike Vrabel is available. It's an insane buffet of candidates, which I guess brings me to my next topic. I'll hit this briefly. Given the coaching candidates who are available, as well as the coordinators I mentioned, and I want to throw out another one, and I think this is worth looking at relative to Seattle, Raheem Morris. That defense, I would say 99% of football fans could not name more than 3 players on that defense coming this year, and they outperformed the Seattle defense.
And it wasn't close.
Just saying. All right, so great candidates. If you're a Bears fan, given the candidates who are available, how do you feel about the decision to continue rolling with Eberflus?
Depends on how Bears pilled you are, right? Like, I think there's just a dyed in the wool. Every decision has been right. Even the Chase Claypool trade was good for us in the long run. I think those people have seen Matt Eberflus and that team grow. And they have. Like, second half of the season this year, the Bears are second in the NFL in points allowed per possession. They have been legitimately a great defense over the second half of the year. And from that perspective, like, if you're grading Eberflus on what he's done, like, that's good. Like, Jalen Johnson turned into a superstar this year. Montez Sweat, a trade a lot of the nerds, myself included, did not like. Looking good so far. Montez Sweat has been awesome for the Bears since arriving there. They still need to add some pieces, but they've made major strides. And so from that perspective, I think you can justify it. But this is the most important offseason for the Bears in, I don't know, 70 years, 80 years. And you're probably changing your quarterback. And it just feels like you're capping, you're limiting what you can do to surround that quarterback with the best possible coaching staff by sticking with the guy who you know is maybe okay, maybe pretty good, but not does not have the ceiling or is not shown the ceiling that some of these other coaches have.
I thought you were say you were using capping in the slang sense. And no, I was briefly shocked.
I'm very old.
When you said the Bears aren't capping, I was like, "Ooh, Bill, I don't know about that, bud." Yeah, I basically agree with everything you said. I think the ideal outcome would be, you know, like D'Amico Ryans bringing in a Bobby Slowick, but that was sort of a unique situation because they almost came hand in hand, right? And I don't know what Eberflus's relationships are like around the league, or if there's any like young offensive guy we don't know about who's not yet a play caller, maybe like a really brilliant quarterbacks coach or a guy at the college level or someone that they know. And I think what's concerning is the limiting factor because it is such a crucial hire. I don't know if it makes it more likely that they're going to stick with Fields or draft a quarterback. I've seen a lot of people kind of trying to read the tea leaves on that. I kind of suspect it's not really, I think the reason he kept his job is just what you said, which is the defensive turnaround. But I do question the wisdom of it, given how important that hire is. However, if they nail the hire, it could be fine because there's nothing wrong with having a defensive head coach and a young quarterback. It's just that that intermediate role is so important. And yeah, that's going to be everything. Okay, well, that brings me to Vrabel, the final bit of coaching news, which we can we don't really need to dig into this one. I think so for those who missed it, Mike Vrabel is out in Tennessee. This is shocking because Mike Vrabel is an extremely good coach. I think everybody agrees. He's one of those coaches where the jocks, the film nerds, and the tape and the numbers people all seem to like. Dan Campbell is at this like beautiful nexus, you know, because on one hand, he is, you know, a former player and he is scary, but on the other hand, he goes for two down eight. You know, he like does, you know, he knows the rules better than most coaches. He rules. I think though, what's tricky here for Titans fans and what makes this job dubious in the same way the Panthers job is, this is surprising. But then I'm like, wait, the firing of John Robinson, their former GM, was really surprising. You remember midseason last year after the AJ Brown, you know, game famously. But then the firing of Mike Mularkey after they made it to the playoffs was also surprising. And I'm not saying any of these decisions in and of themselves were wrong, but what you have is a pattern of ownership being surprising. And I think for coaching candidates, that has to be a little bit alarming. Because every single one of those points, Bill, I remember being surprised by all of them.
Absolutely. I mean, even going back to Mike Mularkey, where he was fired after winning a playoff game, where it was like, okay, you beat the Chiefs, you're good, you don't have to worry about it. And then 1 week later, he's fired. I think the difference between the Panthers maybe and Tennessee here is that they already have a guy who we know is going to run personnel. Brent Carthen is going to run personnel in Tennessee. For the Panthers, like, it might be, you know, an all-you-can-eat option if you're going to hire Jim Harbaugh and say, okay, like if Jim Harbaugh wants personnel control, he can't go to Tennessee. Tennessee's not going to give that to him as an option. Carolina, they're desperate for anybody to take that job. They might offer it to you if you want to be the head coach and GM there. They might say it's like a two-in-one opportunity. So I think that changes things because if you're a head coach, not only are you a little nervous about ownership, but do we know Rand Carthen is good at this? Like, he deserves more time, no question, but that first offseason where they brought in Andre Dillard to be their starting left tackle and he lasted 6 weeks before they had to take him out to protect their quarterbacks. Like, just the early signs have not been great. And again, I'm not saying he should be fired. He deserves more time. No question about that. But you're tying, you know, your lot as a head coach maybe to two people who you're not sure you feel great about in terms of ownership and the general manager.
And then the roster's just not in good shape. I mean, there's so much to be done there. The offensive line is still a train wreck. The secondary has holes. There's still good players on both sides of the football. I think you've seen enough with Levis to give him a shot next year. But I think it was that sort of muddled aspect of the roster that made this team really hard to understand last offseason. Because on one hand, you're drafting a quarterback, you're trying to fix the offensive line with the first pick, which, you know, you're rebuilding. Then on the other hand, you're not trading anyone, Henry, Tannehill, some of the defensive players. And then you signed DeAndre Hopkins. Like, what was the timeline? Like, I didn't understand it. And I do wonder, again, leading to this, the owner, Amy Strunk Adams is her full name, I think. It's the Strunk is what keeps her from being Amy Adams. Said, you know, we need everyone working hand in hand. That made me think there was probably some conflict in the building from a roster construction standpoint, both when Robinson was in place and then Carthen, in terms of like, are we rebuilding? Mike Vrabel strikes me as a person who's not interested in rebuilding, but he's a very great. So I think to put a bow on it, don't love it, understand it, think he should be a very desirable candidate for a lot of teams. But there's so many desirable candidates.
Do you think they should have been more aggressive about trying to trade him, even if it meant not getting their preferred candidate or what the argument whatever they made?
So Diana Russini, who used to work at ESPN, had a post about how they were like, it's too much work. I'm paraphrasing. It would be too difficult, which I can deeply relate to. I would have thought they would have been able to trade him. I'm not, I guess the intricacies of that stuff and the timing of it all definitely is above my pay grade, but of all of the coaches, I would say even more than Belichick and Carroll, doesn't mean I think he's a better coach than them, but he strikes me as the most likely trade candidate of all of the coaches who are available. I don't know, man. Let's wrap here. If you were the Chargers and you had your choice between Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, Mike Vrabel, and Jim Harbaugh, which of the four would you choose?
This is an impossible question to put on me with no notice. I think I would choose Jim Harbaugh because you're kind of getting someone who has built two programs, built the Niners and built Michigan very successfully. Someone who has experience working with quarterbacks and getting the most out of quarterbacks and the most out of offenses. And as good as those other guys are, they're all defensive coaches. And so I think maybe you lean towards Harbaugh because he's the offensive coach.
I also like, I agree. I think,
you don't sound confident about it.
I'm not confident about it. It's an impossible choice. All these coaches are amazing. I think Harbaugh, one thing that's really appealing is he might bring his defensive coordinator from Michigan with him. And after watching that coordinator tear apart my Washington Huskies like an actual Wolverine going through the trash, I am a big fan of his. I think Harbaugh also is a modern thinker when it comes to game management, play calling on both sides of the football. And I think that's very much needed. So crazy, crazy coaching cycle. I'm sure this won't be the last. It definitely won't be. All these jobs are still open. So there'll be a lot to talk about amidst the playoffs. But let's get to the playoffs because, oh my God, it's been like 20 minutes and we haven't actually gotten to the games. And they're great games. And I figure we would just go in chronological order if that's okay with you.
Yes.
Starting with the Browns-Texans. Last time these teams did play, CJ Stroud didn't play. So you can kind of throw a lot of it out the window. I think what you can't throw out the window, though, and what I want to start off by talking to you about, Bill, is what happened on the other side of the ball, which is Joe Flacco shredded the Texans defense. Now, to be fair, they didn't have Will Anderson Jr., and I think Grenard got hurt pretty quickly, or I can't remember exactly. He wasn't in most of the game. And Joe Flacco had a lot of time. But what really struck me, I mean, what he did is something that he has done to a ton of defenses this year, which is he killed them with play action, particularly the under center play action, which is something that the Texans defense has struggled with all year. This is a number that I want to read this to you because it kind of blew my mind. So the Texans have allowed the most yards per play versus play action in the NFL. It's 10.1, which is not great. Guess what the Browns' yards per play is on the other side of the ball. Who are the best?
I'm going to guess
10.1. 1.9 yards per
play. Oh, sorry. I was confused. Browns' defense.
The Browns' defense is very, very, very good against it. The Texas defense has been very, very, very bad against it. Unfortunately, the defense that is playing Joe Flacco, not the Cleveland one. Is there anything you think that the Texans defense can do differently in this game? Is there any reason to you think the result on that side of the football might be different?
I do. And I think what comes to mind for me is Amari Cooper was uncoverable for most of that game. You also get like 265 yards in that game. They try. And if you remember in that game, that was the game where Dustin Hopkins went down injured. So the Browns just had to go for it every fourth down. And every fourth down, they're just like, we're just going to throw a speed out to Amari Cooper. He's going to be open. Joe Flacco's going to hit like a window this big on the sideline. We're not worried about it. And it worked every single time. And I think they were kind of caught between, do we play with inside? Are we, you know, are we calling defenses that are middle of the field close so we can play with outside leverage and take away those speed outs? Or do we keep, you know, two deep safeties, keep middle of the field open, and then run the risk of Amari Cooper doing the Amari Cooper stuff over the middle of the field to us? And the only way you solve that, two ways you solve it, and the Texans could do both in this game, theoretically. One is pass pressure, and Will Anderson's still dealing with a high ankle sprain, but he had two sacks against Andre Dillard, the aforementioned, against Tennessee, still had some pressures against Indy in week 18. And the other one is, I think, the big concern for this Browns offense, that even with Joe Flacco playing great, dude's still throwing lots of interceptions.
Yes.
He's still throwing two picks a game. And I think if you're the Texans, and we'll talk about their side of the ball in a second, if you can win the turnover battle and get those two interceptions from Joe Flacco, which he seems to hand out like candy, and turn those short fields into points, that flips the nature of this game in some ways.
Yeah, I think on that side of the ball, you do have to bet a little bit on variance. I would also, you talked a little bit about the structure of coverage. I would also aggressively play the boots in this one, and they'll kill you. Yeah. And, you know, and Anderson Jr. is very good at this, by the way, because he's a really good run defender. But he's very good at chasing down quarterbacks. They'll punish you for it. They will run the ball. And I think you just take that. And, you know, the Texans defense is actually very good against the run too, by the way. So any down where they can get Cleveland to run the ball instead of executing play action or targeting Cooper is probably a win for them on that side of the football. I think what's challenging is David Njoku, as also I'm not sure a problem with many answers for Houston. And he has been unbelievable. I think him and Flacco, I mean, he is really incredible on a tear right now. Yeah, just incredible. The yards after the catch, his ability to get open on scramble drills, all of it. He's amazing.
Yeah, it just feels like Joe Flacco and David Njoku have been playing secretly together for a decade. And we didn't realize it until Joe Flacco just showed up on the field. I think it feels like we're sort of like speed running the meta of football over the last 5 years. Like, you know, just run the boot directly at the quarterback, or run your pass rush strictly at the quarterback. Don't honor the run, just play the boot. Yeah. And I think it's probably smart. Like, I think that's the logical way to do it. If the Browns are going to run over you, like, you can deal with that. You can maybe get a stop, maybe get a sack, maybe get a penalty, get them in second, third and long, and then hope that your pass rush gets home and you can, you know, drop seven in the coverage and have your two best pass rushers in Greenard and Will Anderson actually on the field together.
Yeah. The Browns
against backup tackles, by the way.
Backup tackles. So I think that's the other thing is, like, Kevin Stefanski's done such a good job of protecting this offensive line, which is why the run game is so bad, to be clear. And the play action game is so well designed. It changes week to week. I mean, I talked about the under center boot stuff, but there are weeks where they come out and it's in the gun with pulling action, and it's you know, we talk about Joe Flacco's sort of renaissance, but he is being put in great positions, and he's also been making throws on the run in a way that makes no sense.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. So I don't doubt, like, you know, I think, like I said, I think if they do the things we're talking about, they will run the ball, but I think you take your chances there if you're Houston. The other side of the ball is really interesting to me. Because so Stroud didn't get to play this team. He is amazing.
He's good.
However, I've talked about this a little bit. I talked about it last week with the Colts in a way where I said, I don't know about these Colts against CJ Stroud. So he has a very dramatic disparity in his performance against man and zone. He has been the best quarterback in football at slicing up zone coverage. Which really makes sense, I think, for a number of reasons. It's the Bobby Slowick, Shanahan offense against man coverage, 27th in QBR, 38.8. So, and that's, by the way, that's not a CJ Stroud stat. That's a Texans offense stat. And it's a stat that I think is exacerbated by the loss of Tank Dell, because you really now only have one wide receiver who really puts the fear of God in you and Nico Collins. And he is fantastic.
Yes.
So against the Colts, didn't matter. The Cleveland Browns, arguably the best man coverage unit when they play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're the Texans, does that worry you? Do you think Jim Schwartz will lean into that? And this is really the healthiest they've been in a while. Their cornerbacks are back. Okoronkwo might even be back. The linebackers are healthy. I feel like that there's, from a matchup perspective, there's a lot that favors them.
There's one guy, though, Mina, you did not mention in the conversation about the Browns being the healthiest they have been. And that is the guy, I think, to me, who matters the most in this game, and that is Myles Garrett, because over the last seven games, Browns fans have been furious at me because I didn't put him on my all-pro team. Myles Garrett has one sack. And yes, we can do the thing where sacks are not the only thing that matter for edge rushers. Yes, he's been held. Yes, the Browns, you know, teams are getting the ball out quicker. All that stuff is true. But he has one sack in his last seven games. That is not the Myles Garrett we know and love. And over that time period, Mina, the Browns defense has not been as good. So before the injury, week one to week 12, the Browns, when, if you take out the drives that were not ending in interceptions or fumbles, basically drives that are not ending in turnovers, the Browns were still the best defense in football. So comparing them on drives that ended anything but turnovers to everyone else. Since the Garrett injury, they are 14th by the same metric. They are more and more relying on turnovers to keep them afloat. Mm. I mean, think about the Jets game, for example. Mm. Like Trevor Siemian was moving the ball on them in that game, unless Trevor Siemian turned the ball over. And the problem for that, for the Browns, is guess who's the best offense in football at not turning the ball over this season? That is CJ Stroud. Wow. And the Houston Texans. And so I think your point is really valid based on the Browns that we've seen over the course of the broader season. But yeah, if they don't have the Myles Garrett, who is a defensive player of the year, does that change their ability to hold up in man coverage? Can they get as much pressure with man coverage? Do they have to blitz more to supplement what Myles Garrett would normally offer them? And then if they do that and they do play man behind, well, might work. Nico Collins might run away from you for a long touchdown. Like, I think that's the thing that concerns me, is just, is the Browns defense the one that we all fell in love with during the first half of the year?
And I think ultimately this is going to just come down to who's healthy and how healthy are they. Myles Garrett being important, but also, you know, I talked about Ward being back in the lineup. Yeah. We'll see if Okoronkwo.
Grant Delpit's coming back.
I think Grant Delpit is coming back. That's really, he was playing fantastic football for them. So yeah, all these play, especially again, if they do play a lot of man, and I kind of think that they will. Is Ward healthy enough to shut down Nico Collins if he's given that assignment? You know, those are the questions, because of how good the quarterback is. I think those are the questions that could determine whether they look as dominant, to your point, as they've been. Mm-hmm. Underrated factor is the Okoronkwo revenge game, though. As I said his name, it just popped into my mind. I am leaning Cleveland in this one, largely not because of what we just talked about, but because I do think on the other side of the ball, I really like what this Texans defense is building, but I fear that they're uniquely vulnerable to some of the things that Cleveland does well. Deep pass also is something that I think, you know, Joe Flacco and Amari, you talked about them. Houston has struggled with that all year long. I think their best chances, and as what we talked about at the beginning, is turning Flacco over, which happens a lot.
It does, but the Browns have been so good at overcoming it that we haven't noticed. So if the Browns force a couple turnovers, I think it's no problem they win this game. But if the Texans do continue to protect the football and we get the same Flacco we've seen all year, both good and bad, that leads me to lean towards the Texans. So we don't disagree very often on games, so I feel like this is a good place to start this conversation.
This one is the hardest of the week, I think. Yeah, I think probably that I haven't looked at the lines. I know that Cleveland is favored, but I think it's pretty slight.
I think it's 2.5 is the line for Browns Texans
in Houston. So
that feels fair.
I might be too Flacco pilled right now.
Can anyone blame you? I would say more than any other quarterback this year, I have been so excited Monday morning after I've worked till like 4 in the morning to get up and watch Joe Flacco all 22. It is so sick to see some of the throws Joe Flacco is making.
The throw to Amari, I can't remember which game, maybe it was the Texans. There was one throw he made to Amari that I would say is one of the five best throws of the entire season. I think Yeah.
It was the Bears game, right? It was the one where Amari caught it between three Bears and like ran through them for a touchdown. Incredible. Like if it happened in Madden, you would be like, oh, Madden's rigged. This is terrible.
Okay, let's do Dolphins Chiefs next. This is the game on Peacock, right? This is a fun game.
I believe so.
It would
be fun if everyone was healthy.
I was going to say, it would be fun if it wasn't negative whatever degrees. I can't imagine. I guess we could start there. I hate doing weather analysis, but our stats and info folks inform us that the Dolphins have lost 10 straight games. I thought when I saw 10 straight games, I thought it was going to be like sub 10 degrees. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like extreme weather. No, it's just sub 40. They've lost 10 straight games in sub 40. This is from our stats and info group.
You know, as someone who moved from the East Coast to LA, you do not get to play this card.
Oh my God. I have the heat on in my house right now. It's probably like in the low 60s. I am not shaming the Dolphins. I am merely delivering the facts that our stats and info group sent to us. Does that worry you if you're a Dolphins fan?
It would if it were not for the fact that I'm worried about this other thing that's happening to the Dolphins, where they don't have any players left
from the Dolphins. Wow. Sorry. Nick Saban is retiring. What is going on in America right now? All of my heroes.
Is there a secret football league that's starting somewhere else and they're hiring like all the coaches who are notable?
Maybe they're wild. Aaron Rodgers. Forget the conspiracy theories about whatever. I don't even want to get into it. This is the conspiracy theory I want you to unpack. Did they get together and agree to switch jobs? Maybe Bill Belichick is going to Alabama? Like, no, okay. Pete's going to Alabama. Bill's going to Seattle. What on earth, dude? This is wild.
Okay. If the coaches came together and were like, we are going to have, we're going to pick our jobs out of a hat, and you get to see Pete Carroll's reaction when he finds out he's about to coach the Tennessee Titans next year. Like, wouldn't that be the most incredible? Like the decision, but random and for coaches, it would be incredible.
No. Okay. They need to do it like a white elephant. Where you can give it back or you can trade.
Yes. Pete Carroll was the coach of the Titans for 30 seconds before he took the Alabama job instead.
He's like, oh my friend. This is nuts. Wow. I'm sorry. You were talking about the Dolphins and the Chiefs, and I just...
Should we talk about Nick Saban? Do you have Nick Saban thoughts?
No, I don't have... I mean, not really.
Do you want to see... I guess I've always sort of looked at Nick Saban and been like, okay, I know he was in the NFL. It did not go great. I would kind of like to see him coach one more time in the NFL just to see if he's really good. If he's not, you know, without the recruiting advantage, doesn't interest you?
No, it sounds like he's really retiring. I'm just looking at the texts I'm getting. Like he's tired. He's
we're all tired. It's January.
Well, that's the thing. All these guys are old. I mean, not Rabel, but
I mean, it does sort of feel like if you're the Patriots and you're moving on from Belichick, man, this is the day to do it. Get that out there while you have three other like famous coaches all getting fired or leaving on the exact same day.
Maybe the news will break while we're talking. I don't know. Jeez. All right, Dolphins Chiefs. Sorry, you were talking about the Dolphins and cold weather.
I thought I said something really stupid. The look you gave me was like, did I say something controversial? Or I was saying the Dolphins, the weather would matter if it were not for the fact that all of their players are injured.
Yeah, sucks.
That I think is it's a bummer. And like, I would love to see this game on a neutral field in mild weather as opposed to frigid weather. Like, I think it does matter, but I don't think it makes a difference in relation to having your top three edge rushers, your second best cornerback, your top inside linebacker, maybe your second best wide receiver and your starting running back all injured.
I think on that side of the ball more, which is where the bulk of the injuries are. And then they're cluster injuries. I think that's the thing. You lose, you know, one edge rusher, then you use your second edge rusher, then you use your third edge rusher. You're bringing in Justin Houston and Bruce Irvin. It's like a suicide squad right now of edge rushers. I think what is an interesting decision for Vic Fangio is whether or not to bring pressure. He did against Josh Allen. He went zero blitz a few times because of the injuries, you know, and with Mix, he had some success doing so, actually. I think one of the Allen turnovers came off of it, if I remember correctly. I don't, however, think that is the right approach against Patrick Mahomes, especially because this Chiefs, as much maligned as this Chiefs offense is, it's still a very deadly and prolific screen game. Most screens in the NFL, second in yards per attempt, only behind San Francisco. And, you know, they're not explosive, but he can still beat the blitz. Whereas I can envision a world, Bill, where actually if he channeled Lou Anarumo in the AFC Championship a few years ago and went more drop eight, I could actually see that giving this version of the Chiefs offense some problems.
Absolutely. I think that's a really accurate point. And if you're the Dolphins, do you just say, hey, we're putting Jalen Ramsey on, I was going to say Travis Kelce, but maybe Rashee Rice as opposed to Travis Kelce, and just say, all your other dudes aren't getting open. Like, yes, Eli Apple is now our second best corner or our third best cornerback, and that's kind of lame, but like Sky Moore's hurt, but like Marquez Valdes-Scantling's not getting open against Eli Apple. Like, you know, I think you could make that case. And even though they are down their top three edge rushers, they still have Zach Sealer, they still have Christian Wilkins, they still have guys who you're going to, you know, drop three, could drop eight, or, you know, run TE games to try and get something open that way, as opposed to just winning one-on-one with, you know, pure rush. That might work. And the other thing is Mahomes historically has been like the blitz killer of all blitz killers in the NFL. Like, blitzing Mahomes has been a recipe for failure unless you're Todd Bowles in the Super Bowl and the Chiefs are down to four backup linemen. So I agree with you. Like, I think if you're the Dolphins, normally like blitzing, if you're an underdog, is usually a better strategy because you're creating more variance, right? Like, you're creating more big plays, but also maybe better chances of a sack or an interception or a fumble. And I would normally say if you're the underdog, blitz more, try to do something crazy like that. But I agree with you. I think if you're the Dolphins, you want to absorb as much as possible. You want to try and, you know, get a holding penalty from those Chiefs tackles, get a false start, get them in third and long, and then maybe you can get that pass rush to get home.
Yeah, it's like when I play ping pong against my brother. My brother, he can out-hit me. He can slam it. He can use more spin. But I can just always hit it back, and eventually he F's up.
That's why they call you the wall in the Kimes family.
Well, I think Fangio needs to take a similar approach. Just hope that somebody on the Chiefs offense F's up, which, by the way, that happens a lot. So, you know, it could work in his favor. Yes. On the other side, do you think that there could be a bounce back performance for this Miami offense? They're very up and down. You know, they tend to follow their stinkers with good games. Yeah. You know, the last game I think would qualify as a stinker for them certainly by their standards. How do you feel that they match up with a Chiefs offense that is significantly healthier?
Yeah. I think that the hard part is, you know, are we getting Jalen Waddle? Are we getting Raheem Mostert? And to what percentage of those guys are we getting if they're on the field? Because I love Devin Achane. I mean, obviously, who doesn't love Devin Achane? Like, he's incredible to watch. But having the ability to go to Raheem Mostert as your second option, as opposed to Jeff Wilson, is a big advantage for the Dolphins. He's a better player, a more well-rounded player, a better receiver. And I think that does play up for them. And with Jalen Waddle, like, if Jalen Waddle does not play in this game, the Chiefs might just say, we're putting L'Jarius Sneed on Tyreek Hill, and that's going to be enough. You're not going to be able to find a second guy in this offense at receiver. And the Chiefs do have a very good pass rush. They can rush four and get home with Chris Jones and George Karlaftis. And I think that's a recipe for failure for the Dolphins. So depends on those guys. And I think you have to do every trick you possibly can to get Tyreek Hill prevented from getting him jammed at the line of scrimmage. Obviously the Dolphins are going to use motion, like no point in even pretending they're not going to, but like every trick you can to get space for Tyreek Hill and then hope that he makes someone miss after the catch, because it feels like that is their really only path to doing things at this point. And it doesn't feel like they have a plan B anymore.
Yeah. Tyreek Hill needs to have the game of his life. I think can't have the kind of drops you've seen occasionally over the last few weeks. I do think even without Mostert, they can still get them on the ground, provided that they don't fall behind, obviously. This is a Chiefs defense that finished the year fifth in DVOA versus the pass, 27th versus the run. Mm-hmm. And they've been vulnerable to some of the runs that Miami does really well. I was just sorting it. The second worst yards per carry versus zone runs, the third worst versus runs with jet motion, the third worst mm-hmm. versus runs outside and off tackle. So you can stretch mm-hmm. them out horizontally. But again, to your point, with only with Hill in the field and no Waddle, it becomes a lot easier to defend that if you're Kansas City, when you're not compromised structurally the way you are when those two guys are on the field. So, you know, I'll say this, like, we talk so much about Tua and whatever. Mike McDaniel, like, show me something. You know, like, this is you, man. You're the run dude. Like, bring it this week, because there is a vulnerability there to be exploited.
Right. Like, it feels like if they win this game, it's Tyreek goes for like one long touchdown pass and has, you know, five third downs he converts, and then they run for a bunch of yards. And for the Chiefs, they're actually pretty good at not giving up big runs. They're just very inefficient when it comes to success rate. Like, they have one of the lowest rush success rates of anybody in football. And so I think that's your formula, is we know our defense is banged up. We know we don't have a pass rush rotation the way we normally do. It's the oldest school thing in the book. I can't believe I'm coming on the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny to say, run the damn ball and control the clock. But that's where we are with the Dolphins. Like, they are not the explosive team they were earlier this season.
Well, speaking of running the damn ball, the Pittsburgh Steelers face off with the Buffalo Bills. And I'll just start here. I think that's their only real chance in this thing. Mason Rudolph is the quarterback. TJ Watt is out. To me, just offensively, this is a Steelers offense that has been good running the football. And that's they kind of, I think, landed on an offensive identity in the back half of the season. That was, I mean, Rudolph was better than the quarterbacks who preceded him, no doubt. But it was really like, we're going to come out, we're going to put multiple tight ends on the field, and we're going to pound the rock. And by the way, they've been really good throwing with multiple tight ends on the field. In the second half of the season, when they run 13 personnel, I mean, three tight ends, second best EPA per play in football, and an extremely high play action pass rate, which is something the Bills need to be careful for. I feel like that's the formula for them, right? Is just to beat Buffalo on the ground, because as I think good as this Buffalo Bills B defense has been, and that they've been to me the real story of the second half of the season for this team. I think that, you know, they are down. I think Dodson might play, but obviously they're a little bit smaller at the linebacker position. And I feel like Pittsburgh could potentially bully them there.
Yeah. I mean, they've moved from, I think the Steelers have moved from more of a zone-based running offense to more of a power offense, to more gap scheme runs. And that makes sense. I think Najee Harris has been a much better back in the context of that offense. And that is a logical place for the Steelers to go. I mean, you're not asking a ton of Mason Rudolph in this game. What you're asking is, don't turn the ball over. Classic Steelers thing. And you're asking, basically hit one big play where one of our receivers can run away from the coverage. And he's done that. Like, we saw last week, it was Deontay Johnson. Week before, it was George Pickens. The Bills are, as usual, banged up in the secondary. Rasul Douglas went down in the game last week. The safeties are 100%. I mean, this is a team where normally Sean McDermott's defenses are very good at avoiding giving up explosive plays. I don't know if that's the case given the actual personnel they have anymore. So, like, you know, I would not be shocked if the Steelers had more success on offense in this game than people are giving them credit for coming in.
Defensively,
that's the problem.
Yeah. If TJ Watt was playing, I would feel a lot better. The on and off numbers, they're not great.
It's bad over the last few years. Yeah, I think
they
would be the number one defense in football if TJ Watt was on the field, based on the QBR with him on the field. And they are the worst defense in football over the last few years with TJ Watt off the field. So 1-10 historically without TJ Watt.
If you're Buffalo, and we know, it doesn't need to be said, they need to turn Josh Allen over. that is the formula.
Oh. That's what I was going to bring to the show.
Get Josh Allen to give you the football. The problem with that is there's no real, like,
incentive or motivation, right?
Get rid of the
football.
Yeah, exactly. There's no patterns to when Josh does it. It's the pattern is that you know, he gets the zoomies. Can you give him the zoomies? if you're Joe Brady and you're Buffalo, I feel like you should have time because of the absence of TJ Watt. I think your offensive line should hold up pretty good. I think the Steelers defense is really vulnerable at linebacker and middle of the field. That's something that with Joe Brady, they've done a good job of attacking. I could see this being a big James Cook, Dalton Kincaid game.
Yeah, Kincaid. Yeah, I think it makes sense for the Bills to come out and use 12 personnel. And like Kincaid is like, saying 12 is unfair because he's not really like a normal tight end. Like he's like, it's like 11 and a half in terms of the personnel. But like having Kincaid, having Knox, forcing them to match with their base defense, and then just taking advantage. The Steelers are down to, I mean, third and fourth string linebackers. They've had so many injuries there over the course of the season. That's just the logical place to attack. Stretch them. Let Josh Allen get behind. And like, on top of that, Josh Allen is going to have opportunities to run with the football, both as undesigned runs and as a scrambler. This is a Steelers defense that, you know, has given up some running opportunities for quarterbacks. To be fair, they play Lamar twice a year, so that might be influencing the numbers a bit. But if you're the Steelers, are you shadowing Stephon Diggs with Joey Porter Jr.?
You know, I think this is a question that I think is actually a lot more complicated because of the lack of usage of Stephon Diggs, frankly.
That's why I asked you before you asked me.
No. It was a question I asked last week with Jalen Ramsey, and at times they didn't actually, which I think was pretty telling of how they viewed Diggs and his role in this offense right now, and and what his lack of production. I think like it, you probably take a similar approach if you're Pittsburgh, frankly. I just don't think that's how you're going to, maybe it is how they could kill it. I could be wrong. Of course, it's Stephon Diggs. He could still have an incredible game at any moment, but it just feels like we've now seen a pretty strong pattern over the last few weeks of him not doing so. I think it'll be interesting just for me to see whether they send pressure. That can be a formula
feels like they should.
For failure. Yeah, but it feels like they might have to without TJ Watt. By the way, your point about how Dalton Kincaid is, it's like 11 and a half personnel. I feel like for the Steelers with Darnell Washington, it's like 12 and a half personnel. It's like, because he's basically an offensive lineman out there, two very, very different rookie tight ends. Yes. My mom just texted me. Sorry, I have to read this. You looked emotional speaking about Pete on TV today. All right. Well, let's wrap here. You know, I think this could actually be a little bit, I don't think it's a blowout because of what we were talking about, but I do think the Bills win pretty handily. So we skipped the Chiefs. I got the Chiefs against Dolphins, by the way.
Yeah. I have Chiefs as well. I think we think we're on the same wavelength there. Like so many things have to go right for the Steelers to win this game. Like Mason Rudolph can't turn back into every other Mason Rudolph we've seen before the last three
weeks.
He was
bad last week, by the way. He's not why they won that game. So
I know. But like he's been better than I think we expected over the course of his time as a starter.
Ended Pete Carroll's
career. Have to get a big play. You think that was it? You think they're like, Rudolph?
I really think you can't overestimate how much owners don't like being embarrassed. I'll just say that.
That is very astute of you to say. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Just so many things have to go right, and they have to go in the order that I think you need them to have to happen. And even then, like, even if the Steelers get up 10 points in the second half, the way the Dolphins did last week, we saw, like, Josh can just turn it on, and that could be that. So I find it really hard to believe the Steelers are going to pull the upset here.
I do too. All right, let's come back and talk about
it. I'm a Steelers hater, as you know.
You are a Steelers hater. Well, Bill and I, if you listen to the show, you remember we did some predictions. You were wrong about things. I was wrong about things. We don't have to get into it.
We can agree Dominique was more wrong than either of us, though.
I can't remember what his takes were, but I wish, man, right before we did that pod, I think one of the takes I ended up not doing was like, I think the Ravens are going to like obliterate the NFL. You remember that? I was like, Lamar's going to be MVP. I said Lamar was going to be the MVP, and then I backed off of it for some reason. I think I thought it wasn't hot enough for my hottest take.
Takes don't count if they're not on recorded media.
Them in text DMs to you. I'm gonna find them.
Oh, I would look for it, but I have an Android. I don't have text history the way that.
All right. We got three more games to get through. Let's take a break. Come back.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.com. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7111. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay, we are back. Neither of us believe that the Steelers will upset the Bills. Little nervous if I'm a Cowboys fan, however, about the Green Bay Packers. Yeah, last I saw there were 7.5 favorites, which that made me nervous. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, let's start with where the Cowboys offense, because I do think the Cowboys are deservedly favorites. Largely because they're at home. I also think this offense matches up very well with Green Bay.
Yes, that was what I was going to say. I'm going to leave it to you. I feel like you are the documenter this year of the Cowboys. Mino, what does Dak Prescott like to do the most?
He loves to throw over the middle of the field.
And where are the Packers particularly brutal on defense?
Oh, Bill, I'm glad you asked that question. In the second half of the season, and I split into the second half because I was like, maybe it's not as bad. On passes between the numbers, the Packers are allowing 0.5 EPA per play. That is the worst in the NFL. It's actually worse in the second half of the season than the first half, but they're the worst over the course of the entire season as well.
Yes, 32nd in QBR as well. So just in case you got some kind of EPA glitch, nope. They are terrible defending passes over the middle of the field. And Dak loves to throw seam routes over the middle of the field. Loves CeeDee Lamb in the slot. Loves anything you can give Dak between the numbers, he wants to throw. And so, like, you know, I'll just start there. Like, is that disqualifying for the Packers in this game? Like, are they just hopeless because they are so bad at stopping the thing that's kind of at the core of what the Cowboys do on offense?
Can I do one more stat on this? Please. That the Packers... Okay, so what is basically automatic with CeeDee Lamb? I mean, there's a lot of things that are automatic.
Option routes or slants?
Option route slants. Slants are. I am convinced a slant to CeeDee Lamb has never failed. I know it has. I've seen that. But I'm just. It's never not worked. So the Packers versus slants. I was sorting this on SIS out of curiosity. Highest passer rating in the NFL. 143, 9.2 yards per attempt.
9.2.
0.77 EPA per play. And they're facing the slant god. It's not great, Bill. It's not great. I think their best chance is the pass rush. I'll just say that. That's pass rush and Mike McCarthy stubbornly running the ball maybe would be the other thing that comes to mind. That's their best chance on that side of the
ball. Cowboys are not good at running the football. But
no, don't do it. But, throw a slant every time. Throw a slant.
Since the bye, they have thrown the ball more. They've changed their offense. Like, I mean, you said this all summer. Like, this idea that Mike McCarthy was going to take over and run the ball a ton was not supported by the actual decisions and things the Cowboys had done during the offseason. And
until the Lions
especially game. After the bye, until the Lions game. We don't have to talk about the Lions game. That so was bad. Just an aberration. So you know, like in general, they've been one of the highest pass rates in neutral situations on early downs in football. I think they're fifth in the NFL, according to Ben Baldwin's site, since their week 7 bye. So I don't think they're going to fall into that trap, but I'm it's Mike McCarthy. I've had my run-ins with Mike McCarthy in the postseason before. I'm not going to let anything convince me otherwise. So from that perspective, I'm nervous, yes. But I just think if you're going to draw up a defense that struggle that things the Cowboys would want a defense to struggle at, you would draw up the Packers defense.
The pass rush did look really good against Justin Fields. Very different quarterback from Dak Prescott. Holds onto the football. Very different everything. The offense is different. But they do have good players. So I just think that's their only real chance on that side. On the other side, this is why this is a game. Because as the Cowboys offense defense is much better, of course, than Green Bay. But the Packers offense slaps. I love this offense. Bill, we haven't really had a chance to talk about it. I think they're good at so many different things. I've seen Jordan Love problem solve different coverages, different pressures. I think that as good as the Dallas pass rush is, they've got a really good chance of keeping pace with them on the other side of the ball if he plays the way he's played over the last couple of weeks.
Right. I think it depends on how far you're willing to go back. Because before the last couple of weeks, you need a couple bad games and a couple games where you turn the ball over a bunch. For sure. No question. No question. Absolutely. You are 100%.
Sorry, podcast audience. I did a like kind of a roller coaster that was mostly going up.
Yeah, but going down occasionally. And that is the concern here, I think, is that you can turn him over still. Yes, the Giants game, very, very confusing game for me as someone who was like, pick the Packers, make the playoffs before the year. Skeptical of the Giants. Giants stink. Packers are good. I'm like all ready for like the coronation game, and they laid an egg. And I think that was something I was not expecting. And that was not that long ago. Nope. That was only like one or two Tommy Cutlets news cycles ago. You know, I think Jordan Love is someone who we see him improving week after week, and we see him, you know, like you said, I think problem solving is a really good way to put it in terms of like I think he's much more confident now in terms of getting to the back of his drop and knowing where he wants to go with the football and trusting that, you know, what he's seeing is actually what's going to play out in practice. And that is something that only comes with time, only comes with practice. And you're seeing him make anticipation throws now that I don't think he made earlier this season. Maybe he made them occasionally earlier this season, but didn't make them as often as he does now. And that's how you're going to beat the Packers, because they have not just a fearsome pass rush, but the quickest pass rush in all of football. If you have a quarterback who can read stuff quickly, get the ball out quickly, which he can, maybe make some space for himself, which he can, and then put the ball in a place where the Cowboys are not able to cover so quickly, I think that's how you hit big plays on this defense.
I agree. I think how the Cowboys approach pressure, knowing that, will be really interesting as well. Knowing that Green Bay is going to use a lot of misdirection, RPOs, the ball's going to be coming out hot. One thing I think I talked about this a little bit on NFL Live yesterday that I would consider doing if I'm Dan Quinn is moving Micah Parsons inside, some lining up there. They run a lot of stunts as well.
For sure.
The Packers' weak link on their offensive line is their center. Jordan Love has also been worse flushed out of the pocket. He's really good against pressure and he steps up and makes plays. But if you can get him outside on the run, he has struggled a little bit. 31st in QBR on the run. So throwing on the run. So I think that it'll be very interesting to see how Parsons is deployed and how many screenshots we get of him being held by multiple offensive linemen as the game goes on.
Yeah, I mean, it there's no wrong answer with Micah Parsons. Like, no matter where you put him, he's going, unless you're using him as a linebacker, which do not do that in this game, Packer or Cowboys. As long as he's rushing the passer, you're generally doing something good. And so I think it's also about the other guys next to Parsons, right? Like, I think Parsons is going to make his plays, but we've seen when DeMarcus Lawrence doesn't have a great game, when O.C. Odighi-Duwa doesn't have a great game. Like, I think there's, you know, it can't all be Parsons. And the Packers do have a good offensive line. They do always rate out well by our pass blocking metrics at ESPN. So if they can hold up for 2.5 seconds, I do think Jordan Love is going to have opportunities to find players.
This is a fun game. I lean Cowboys because it's at home and because of the matchup on their offense versus that defense. But I'm excited. Love and Stroud, man. Just so fun to watch right now. House money. Those guys.
Let me ask you a question that's impossible to answer now about coaching. If the Cowboys lose this game, is that it for Mike McCarthy in Dallas? Especially with like 18 Hall of Fame coaches out there presumably waiting to be hired.
I got to think it's up in the air.
At the very least, right? Like if you're going to lose Dan Quinn to the Seahawks?
Because of the options out there, definitely. I don't know if Dan Quinn gets promoted above him, though. I'm not sure. Mm. But yeah, I think... And it is a very desirable job. It's a great team. I have to think that's on the table. I'll say this, probably will come down to the way he loses. If he loses, if it's like embarrassing, I could see that. He's done a great job this season.
Yes, he's been good. Let's not, if they line up Tony Pollard at center and run a trick play, it's going to be done for him.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Rams Lions, who is it actually a revenge game for? It's Jared Goff. We joke about revenge games. You and I love pointing out esoteric players and pretending they're revenge games, and we're joking. It is an actual revenge game for Jared Goff.
No question. Of course it's a revenge game for Jared Goff. I mean, you were paying close attention to the Rams. Like, basically dumped for John Wolford, sent away in a trade package where they had to attach extra draft picks just to get rid of him. Like, for years, that Rams team, I mean, I remember I wrote about this. I wrote about the possibility of a team just theoretically maybe going out and getting rid of a quarterback and using the money they save by having a series of quarterbacks and rookie deals to spend money elsewhere on the roster. And the Rams were furious about it. I mean, Kevin Dimoff went on stage at Sloan and was like, Bill Barnwell is always trying to get us to trade Jared Goff. And then, of course, they trade Jared Goff and immediately win the Super Bowl. But like, this has been something where the Rams were so all in on Jared Goff. And I'm sure Jared Goff felt that in return, until the moment Sean McVay decided, I'm good. I'd rather play John Wolford in a playoff game than Jared Goff. And that had to hurt. That had to feel brutal. You're sent to basically football Siberia to go play the Lions.
He really was like Jon Snow. Like, they sent him to the wall.
Yes. Yes. And what has Jared Goff done? Rebuild that franchise. He is very good. 14 games out of the year. He is unplayable the other three games, but he's very good for most of the season. The Lions are rallying around him. He's their guy. Absolutely. This is a, let me show you what I have done. Let me show you the glow up that I have accomplished, Jared Goff game for Detroit.
I have so many thoughts on Jared Goff. I think you asked me about Mike McCarthy and whether that game could determine his future. I kind of think this game could determine Jared Goff's future in Detroit.
Really?
Yeah, dude. If he has a stinker,
His contract's coming up. That's true.
Yeah. I didn't mean next year. I meant like whether they'll give him a long-term deal. I think, awesome. Though, just to get to the actual matchup, the question I wrote is, can either of these defenses stop either of these offenses? Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the core here, because I think both offenses are a lot better than both defenses. Mm-hmm. The Lions defense is interesting to me, Bill, because they have been very injured and they are getting some guys back in their lineup. Yep. I'm not sure what the CJ Gardner-Johnson played last week. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he'll be healthier this week. I don't know what the status is of Alim McNeil. I know he's back, but might not be back. And that's mm-hmm. a big loss for them.
For sure.
It's been an interesting unit. They really struggled in the middle of the season. I think since the run defense has been solid and the pass rush has heated up at times, but there are a lot of holes in coverage. I think the thing that jumps out as being the most dangerous for them against this Rams team in particular is versus wide receivers. Their rank in QBR is 32nd, 87.5. Well, don't know if you've watched the Los Angeles Rams recently, but they have a few of them. They're pretty hard to defend. I don't really think the Lions can do that.
Yes. So if you're the Lions, how do you approach this game? Are you have Aiden Hutchinson, who has been excellent this year. Aiden Hutchinson has been awesome. The other pass rushers, James Houston got hurt, but the other pass rushers have not been as effective. McNeil, a solid two-way player, but you don't want him to be your second best pass rusher. And so you have a matchup against Matthew Stafford where if you play coverage, you're probably in trouble. The Rams Stafford is number one in the NFL this year when opposing teams do not blitz by QBR. I think he drops to 27th in the NFL when teams do blitz. And so that kind of feels like a game where you're terrified because you have Cam Sutton, you have CJ Gardner-Johnson coming off of having been gone for 4 months, one-on-one in coverage, probably in cover one, against Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, who are terrifying against man coverage. But getting that pass, getting the extra rushers, causing Stafford to make mistakes is probably your best way to play on defense.
I agree. And I think your point about the blitz is really interesting because Stafford was unblitzable in his Super Bowl campaign. But this year, that's not necessarily been the case for a litany of reasons. I mean, the offensive line has been much better than they were last year, a big part of the reason why this offense is successful. But I do think that if you're the Lions, you do play the variance game a little bit with the pass rush, purely because I just think coverage, they just don't have the horses back there, especially at corner. And, you know, Stafford, he has been awesome this year, but he has had a couple, similar to Jared Goff, he has had a couple of turnover-ish, you know, his turnovers tend to come in clusters, games.
Yes.
Motions are going to be high. This isn't a revenge game for him. It's like a revenge game for Detroit against him. So there's that factor as well. Mm-hmm. I don't want Kelly Stafford to get mad at me. I'm not taking sides. Do you see the fake news about how, like, I forgot who is the patient zero of this fake news that the city of Detroit won't let people wear Matt Stafford jerseys or some kind of crazy, like as though that was enforceable somehow. I don't know. It was
just the idea of them throwing out like just thousands of people milling in Stafford jerseys outside the stadium trying to get in. If you're a Lions fan, like you're not mad at Matthew Stafford. It's not like he, you know, that he screwed the roster up for a decade. It was the people around Matthew Stafford.
It ended up being a rare win-win. I feel like in professional sports, most of them don't feel that way. But on the other side, I think this Lions offense can shred Los Angeles too. Well, shred is the wrong word. I think they can run on them. Start there. I think that the Rams defense we talked about with as it pertains to Raheem Morris totally outperformed expectations. You're getting, obviously, Aaron Donald is still Aaron Donald, by the way. If you watch the Rams, it is still terrifying.
I watched that Rams Giants game. He is 100% Aaron Donald, and the Giants offensive line is still the Giants offensive.
Yeah, it is not. It's not pretty. And they've gotten really good contributions from Kobe Turner and Byron Young, these young players. But you know, they're 25th in EPA per play versus the run. you can still, this Lions team that of course is so dominant on the ground should be able to move the ball on them.
For sure. I think that's the logical place for them to go. What I find interesting about this game is how the Rams are going to use Aaron Donald and how the Lions match up to it. So the guy who's been struggling for the Lions over the past 6 weeks, really since the Packers game on Thanksgiving onward, is Taylor Decker, their left tackle. He's given up, like, I went back and watched all their all their pressures, like 6.5 sacks over the last six games. He's a good player.
Was it the Cowboys game where he just got toasted? It was
not ideal.
Not good.
And Aaron Donald is a defensive tackle. And so nominally, you play him on the interior. They run lots of like TT games with Kobe Turner where they're, you know, Aaron Donald is slanting one way. You bring Turner behind him. They're really good at that. But Aaron Donald also lines up outside. They're willing to line him up across from a left tackle and say, okay, you're the only guy on this side. We have three other linemen to the right side. They're all going to get one-on-ones. You're going to get double teamed, but you're Aaron Donald. You can be double teamed sometimes, like put the Lions in a bind in terms of how they want to pass protect. And so I think from the Lions perspective, when you get that look, and they're going to get that look in this game, I'm just running the ball. Like, I think this is a game where, because Dan Campbell is so comfortable, as we know, going forward and fourth down, I wouldn't be shocked if this was a game where we see 3rd and 8. That might be a rundown for the Lions, thinking we don't want to have Decker hold up in pass protection, and we think we can get 8 yards on two plays on the ground. We're going to be comfortable running the ball at David Montgomery or Jahmyr Gibbs in that situation.
Yeah, I think that the Lions will go in that direction. I think you're absolutely right. And I think that the Rams will respond by playing a lot of base. So then the question will be, and there will be moments in the, because the Rams play amongst the most base in the NFL, and they're good at it, but I think there'll be moments, especially without Sam Laporta, who's the rookie tight end, who would normally, then I would say that's where Sam Laporta comes in, and you're able to, you know, get him matched up with a linebacker, but he's not in this game. And that, at least as of now, and that I think is, creates a limitation for them to exploit the Rams defense the way that I think that they'll play them when they run the ball a lot. I still think they'll be have success. One more thing about this, the Rams, no one ever talks about this, but when you talk about these playoff games and how close they can be, they suck at special teams. That is
the reason I am picking the Lions in this game. They are 32nd in DVOA on special teams.
I'm always thinking the same. I'm like, nobody ever talks about special teams. You're like, that's why I'm picking the Lions.
I don't call you woman. I've never in the years we've done, I've never been like, woman, answer this.
I didn't know how I was gonna land that. That's why I'm picking them. And then I was like, all right, woman, I don't know.
I just want to make it clear that in the course of our friendship, which has been many years,
a lot of things I could have said.
I don't use those words either. I don't believe. No, I mean, like I'm literally doing a column for ESPN Plus this week where I'm going through the playoffs and I'm just previewing every game. And the final paragraph in this section is, the Rams have terrible special teams and the Lions have pretty good special teams. And that is the reason why I'm picking the Lions in this game. So very, very astute point of view, Mina. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Brett Maher is kicking for the Lions or for the Rams again.
He's back.
I love talking about randomness and variance in football. I love being like, oh, you can't overreact to one bad game from a kicker. I mean, this guy missed 5 extra points in the postseason last year. He's cut earlier this season. They brought him back. He missed an extra point last week.
He's missed 2 extra points this year. He's making less than 74% of his field goals. They're also bad at punt returns and punt coverage. Like, it's just, they're bad. It's not good. Yeah. And in a close game like this.
Yes, I think that will be the difference. I think Maher will miss a field goal or an extra point. It'll change the way the fourth quarter plays out. I think the Lions will win. What do you think?
This is the one where I've been going back and forth the most. I'm leaning Detroit as well because I think, there's a few reasons. All right. Eagles Bucks. Let's wrap here. We are going to this game. NFL Live will be on site in Tampa for this absolute banger of a playoff game. So the Eagles are limping into the playoffs.
So are the Bucks, though.
So are
Baker defense, is.
Yeah, literally limping. He's way ribs.
Ribs, but ankle.
Jalen finger. This is tough. I mean, this is the, I'm sure we have the exact same thing written down, which is, can Jalen Hurts beat the blitz? Can he? Right. I mean, this is the obvious question with this game. This was the question the last time these teams played in the postseason back in 2021. He could not. It is something that he has struggled with greatly this season for a litany of interesting and complicated reasons. It is something that we know Todd Bowles, who is called blitz the third highest rate in the NFL, is going to do to Jalen Hurts. So, Bill, what do you think?
This is almost literally word for word from my preview of this game. The Eagles offense also doesn't match up well with Todd Bowles' specialty. It is a problem, and it's a problem not just in terms of talent, but in terms of the schematics. If you watch JT O'Sullivan, who we've talked about, who does great work covering the NFL, when he watches the Eagles offense, same thing every time. They don't have hot reads. They don't have easy answers for the blitz. Their answers are, we're going to beat it with Jalen Hurts running away from a free rusher. We're going to beat it with AJ Brown winning a 50-50 ball. Like, they don't have these built-in answers that a lot of offenses have, and that's something they could get away with last year. I don't know if that's something they can get away with this year, especially if Jalen Hurts is banged up, especially if AJ Brown can't play when he suffered a knee injury last week, especially if Devontae Smith is way less than 100%. And so nothing about that screams we're going to succeed unless the Eagles run the ball well, which I think there's like some kind of like flop lag where the Buccaneers run defense is fine. It's not the run defense it was a couple years ago where it was just like you dominant. Can't run. Like that's Tennessee now is like that Bucs defense from a couple years ago. Like I think this has to be a DeAndre Swift game to me in terms of running and also catching the ball and maybe stretching out those linebackers a bit.
Well, that's what happened in week three when they played. They dominated them on the ground. And I do think this, the Bucs run defense isn't as great as they were a few years ago, but they're still pretty good. It's still challenging. For sure. And so I think that you're going to have to get the best Eagles rushing performance you've gotten in quite some time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's possible. I don't know. I think Spuck's defense has kind of rounded into form as the weeks have gone on. They've gotten healthier. I think that the defensive line is playing really well. Devin White has played better in recent weeks at linebacker. By the way, last time they played, they didn't have Carlton Davis. Yep. And that's the other final point I guess I would have on this that side of the ball in the Bucs defense. So one area where they are very vulnerable this year is on go balls. They are allowing a QBR of 100 on go balls this season, which also they're 30th on deep passes generally in QBR, 26 outside the numbers. Go balls tend to be what that is. The Eagles' offense is really erratic, really untrustworthy. However, they're still good at throwing go balls to those two wide receivers. So if they can, if he can connect with them a few times, I do think the opportunities will be there.
I had a theory a couple of years ago where Greg Ward would always inevitably be like the number one receiver for an Eagles game in December every single season. It kind of feels like that might be the case again on Sunday, like or this weekend. Like they are.
Chris Watkins.
Yes, they. Chris Watkins, Olamide Zaccheaus. I think Dominique was arguing for Zaccheaus to have like a big role in this game. Like they need, if they don't have AJ Brown, like do they have that guy who can win on those go routes? Because we saw Houston pick apart the Bucs with go routes in that game, but the Eagles might not have the horses anymore. I mean, they really are so banked up on the offensive side of the ball.
The other side is worse.
Worse for different reasons, though. The Eagles are healthy on the defensive side of the ball. They just suck. They're just terrible at football suddenly.
Is Slay playing? Because that's huge if he plays.
We don't know. He was really good the first time these two teams played. And I don't want to say he has to play for them to win because the Bucs are not a great team, but I think it shifts from the Eagles being favorites to the Bucs being favorites if he doesn't play. More than anybody besides Hurts, I think he has to be in this game and playing well.
What? So I think the Eagles' defensive issues in the secondary and at linebacker are very easily explained. Up front, I think, is where it gets interesting. and where there would be the most hope for a turnaround, because there's still talent on the defensive line. Mm-hmm. However, pressure levels have fallen off since week 13, 28th in pressure rate. Pass rush win has fallen off a cliff, all the stats, sacks. What do you attribute that to when you watch them?
It's a really good question. I think I haven't looked at it, but I would be surprised if quarterbacks were not getting the ball out quicker just because they're not as confused about coverage. The Eagles are blowing so many assignments week after week, and that I think there are easy answers for this defense week after week. The edge rushers, I think, just aren't playing as well. I mean, Hassan Reddick, Josh Sweat, and Brandon Graham, they had 38 sacks last year, I believe. They had 19 and a half. They had 21, I believe, this year. They have no sacks in a month. And, yes, you can do, use your fronts to create more one-on-ones. You can run TE games, try and get them opportunities. At the end of the day, you're paying Sweat and Reddick, your two core guys, to win one-on-one, and they are not. Brandon Graham is a wonderful player. He has been playing since before I was writing for a career, I believe. He was playing before Pete Carroll was head coach of the Seahawks, I believe. He may have gotten old at the wrong time. Fletcher Cox is a great player and has been a great player for a long time and is still good. He may not be the player he was. Jalen Carter is a good player and an exciting prospect. He looks a little worn down, even though he's one of the few players who has sacks over the second half of the season. Jordan Davis has been a disappointment. Like, I think going from Javon Hargrave to Jalen Carter, having the holes in the secondary, having the holes at linebacker, and maybe getting a little less out of Graham, getting a lot less out of Graham, a little less out of Reddick and Sweat, I think all that's added up. And so I don't think it's like one single problem, but you have, you know, the system where you knew you were changing linebackers, you knew you were changing the safeties, you lose Maddox early in the season. Like, this was a defense that was going to have to survive this year based on their pass rush diving. And since it has kind of regressed back to kind of bad, which is it's very surprising to me, but not all that great, I think everything else has fallen apart around it.
I think you nailed something really significant there that can get lost, which is the relationship between pass rush and coverage. Because there's no reason not to just throw at the linebackers constantly. And there's just always easy answers in the pass game. And that makes life very hard for a pass rush that has struggled on their own merits. And I think the defensive tackles in particular strike me as really not playing the way they were at the very beginning of the season. Although the edge rushers, I would say more game to game. Sometimes there's some games where they either disappear or they're in coverage for God knows what reason. But the point is, I think you nailed something, which is, I mean, quick game just kills this team right now. And I think that's for Tampa a pretty easy solve, because Baker's been a really good quick game quarterback this year. He was actually decent throwing the ball quick the last time these teams played. It was when he held onto the football that there were problems. There's no reason for him to hold onto the football for more than 2.5 seconds in this game, because you can easily matriculate your way up and down the field against this back seven. And for the Eagles to have a chance to rebound, I would say two things have to happen. Slay needs to come back and play at the level he did last time these teams played, by the way. I think they had him on Evans a fair amount.
Evans had 60 yards on 10 targets. Like, he had a touchdown, so it wasn't like Evans was shut down altogether, but they did enough to slow down Evans, and then very little happened around Evans.
And I think they put Bradbury on Godwin. I was looking back at my notes from this game. So those corners need to play a lot better, and then the pass rush needs to be much more effective than they've been in recent weeks.
Yeah. I mean, Matt Patricia has been using Nolan Smith as an off-ball linebacker. That's been like one of the changes he made. It's weird because, like, when you think about Patricia with the Patriots and the Lions, he was always like, we're going to be the most man-heavy defense in football. Doesn't matter who we got back there. That's what we do. He's been running zone more than Sean Desai ran zone with the Eagles. So I think at least he's aware that the secondary is terrible and they shouldn't be in man coverage. But it feels like if you're not bringing in Matt Patricia and having him implement the stuff that he's done well in the past or wanted to do in the past, like, what are you really getting out of this? And nothing.
I would be apprehensive of playing man coverage against this group, especially. I would too. I mean, I don't think there's any, the combination of Godwin and Evans, I just don't think they have answers for right now, the way these guys are running.
I think the best way for the Eagles to hold up on defense in this game is the Bucs are terrible running the football. They were last year. Yes. They're bad this year. Like, Rashad White has numbers because he's the only back who gets the ball, but they're super inefficient running the football. I think they're last or next to last in rush yards over expectation. Like, they are bad in every way running the football. And if you're the Eagles, you're hoping that you get a game where they're in a lot of 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, and God willing, your pass rush gets home, because that is the formula for the Eagles in this game, I think, is just getting a 3rd and long and hoping that Hassan Reddick pushes back the years.
And on that same, on the flip side of that, if you're Dave Canales, don't run pass, man. You don't have to. Just throw it to White. They can't defend him.
Right. Throw it to anybody. Literally the Giants anyone. The Giants were falling out with like Darius Slayton last week, and like they had Wandell Robinson running free for 35-yard gains. Like, just get the ball out and you will win this game. That's all it is.
We've been going through all these defenses and trying to point out, well, they're vulnerable against, you know, when they're in man or cover three or whatever. The Eagles are bad at everything. I haven't brought any, there's no splits necessary. You can attack literally everything on this defense right now. Mm-hmm. Don't run the ball. It's a waste.
Having said all that,
you can also run the ball, but not you.
Yes. Having said all that, are you picking the Buccaneers to win this game? Are you picking them?
I don't know.
Can I tell you, I think we're feeling the same thing. Want to pick the Bucs, but are afraid to?
Yeah. That's how I feel.
Yeah. I pick the Eagles.
I'm probably going to pick the Eagles. I think that there is a strong possibility that we get a great running performance out of this offense. And I do think maybe I'll do the cop-out thing and say, let me wait for the status of AJ Brown. If AJ Brown plays on the Eagles.
I can't believe you would cop out with the listeners and viewers of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny waiting for your pick on this game, Mina.
All right. Well, I'm leaning Eagles right now. I don't know. I have time on this game. Bill, this was great. I loved having you on. You guys can check out Bill's work in many places right now, but the Bill Barnwell Show is on wherever you get your pods is one place to do it. We haven't gone against each other on Around the Horn yet. Now that I'm back in the mix, I'm looking forward to that at some point. You can watch this show on YouTube if you want to see me do the pan motion of the roller coaster, as I was talking about Jordan Love, as opposed to the verbal description. But in the meantime, enjoy the games. I will be back on Tuesday, a little bit later in the day, because I'll be traveling back from Tampa. And yeah, thanks as always to the fine folks at Omaha, Kirsten Sebecki, Anthony Jimenez, Owen Saylor, who help out with this podcast. And I'll see you guys next week. Whoa.